You want to hear the complete Crossing East series? You can order the CD set or downloads at crossingeast.org. And you can also order a CD of the music you're listening to. I produce the Crossing East series with Media Rights Productions and Sarah Caswell Colbert, Catherine Stifter, and Clark Salisbury. We had local funding from the Regional Arts and Culture Council, the Collins Foundation, and the Oregon Arts Commission. You can listen to this show online at stageandstudio.org or on our iTunes podcast. Till next time, I'm Dee Mae Roberts, Stage and Studio.
The 36th annual Cathedral Park Jazz Festival is almost here, and KABU will once again be carrying it live Saturday, July 16. The fun begins Friday night with blues artists such as Ken Emerson and Sister Mercy. Saturday and Sunday will deliver some of Portland's finest: Dan Bommer, Highwater Jazz Band, Joe Manis, Eric Lewis, Tim Wilcox, Mel Brown, Farnell Newton, and more. That's July 15th, 16th, and 17th under the St. John's Bridge at Cathedral Park, the longest-running music festival in Portland, brought to you by the Jazz Society of Oregon and KABU. Full details at cpjazz.com.
The music playing is Inishella Dub by DJ Mad from Portland label Zam Zam Sounds. And this is Art Focus Radio on KABU. This is I'm your host, Andre Middleton. Today my guest is Monica Villasenor.
Villasenor.
Thank you for that correction. Once again, I'm your host, Andre Middleton. Thank you for joining us for the next half hour. We're going to be talking about art in the Portland area. But first up, some local news. Nightlight is a program by the Regional Arts and Culture Council and Portland Community Media. They are seeking video and film artists to apply to the 2016-27 season of Nightlight to present new or recently developed film or video works. This is a call open to individual artists, collectives, or curators in Oregon to submit works to be shown in October, November, or February. Submissions of recently developed works will receive an honorarium. The program is also providing one additional opportunity to create new work through an artist residency at Portland Community Media for the March 2017 installation of Nightlight. This artist will also receive an honorarium to complete a new work to be shown during that month. Please visit rack.org public art to find out more, or you can visit the pcmtv.org homepage as well. Next up, established in 2010, the Portland Biennial is a major survey of Oregon artists who are defining and advancing the state's contemporary art landscape. Building upon the success of its predecessors, the Portland 2016 Biennial is a two-month celebration of the here and now that showcases 34 artists at 25 partner venues in 13 communities across the entire state of Oregon. The largest and most comprehensive exhibition of Oregon art ever. It's running now through September 18th. It's curated by Michelle Grabner and presented by Deshecta Contemporary Art. Please visit portlandbiennial.org to learn more. I attended a wonderful event last night at Third Rail Theater. What's race got to do with it? An interview and open discussion with Kevin Jones, presented by Color of Now. Kevin Jones is a local theater director who has infused the need to change the racial ecology of arts in this region into his work. I mean, was it insightful, powerful, safe conversation that explored the construct of race and how we can change our perspectives regarding race so we can help put a stop to the violence that is ripping our communities apart. Please find The Color of Now on Facebook to find out about their upcoming events that will focus on the issue of gender. So once again, thank you for joining us today. today my guest is Monica Villaseñor. Monica is a writer of science fiction, fantasy, speculative fiction, and horror. She recently ended a decade-long career in technology to pursue her passion to become a writer of future and imaginary worlds. She recently attended the VONA 2016 Speculative Fiction Workshop taught by, and you just gave me this pronunciation a couple of seconds ago, Tanana Reeve Du.
Yes.
Monica is currently working on a YA or young adult urban fantasy series about a Filipino American girl whose life takes many unexpected turns as she discovers the magic and history of her tribal ancestors. Welcome to Art Focus, Monica.
Thank you.
Well, we actually met some time ago for the first time at the Let's Talk PDX rally in March last Thursday. Even though we've been aware of each other on Facebook due to a variety of shared interests, whether it's like being a creative color, our resistance to modern day colonialism. It wasn't until we were actually walking side by side that we had such a shared love for science and speculative fiction. That is told especially from a POC perspective. Please tell us a little bit about your journey and what are you up to these days?
Sure. So I'll start a little bit talking about my career and doing a little bit of a career change. So to begin with, both of my parents are not originally from the U.S. And growing up, there were a lot of rules, a lot of things that I wasn't allowed to do. But one of the things that, you know, I love my parents for doing is bringing me to the library every weekend. And that started my first love of science fiction. And so, yeah, you know, proceeded through life, you know, had a career. And in the summer of 2013, I got married, had my wedding. And it was right after my wedding. I was on the Oregon coast, you know, having some downtime right afterwards. And I was reading Anansi Boys by Neil Gaiman. And I remember at the time, I had actually done almost none of the planning for my wedding. It was all my husband and my wedding planner, because I was so busy and I was so stressed out that I didn't have time to weigh in on the, you know, on the decisions. And so I remember reading that book and thinking, wow, like this was one of the best times I've had all year, you know, is just being in this world of imagination. And it sort of brought me back to the things that I loved growing up. And then I thought, what if this was my life's work, was living in these worlds, creating these worlds that gave me so much pleasure and joy. And so a couple years later, it was summer of 2015, I ended up quitting my career in technology. It was a great career, good for many reasons, but you know, I'm now significantly happier working on my craft of writing speculative fiction, especially from the point of view of people like you and me.
Great. So I guess my next question is, do you have a website? Are you being published? How are you sharing your work and your new world that you're creating with the general public?
Yeah, absolutely. So right now I do have a website, monicavillaseñor.com. But I have a lot of things that are in motion right now. It is somewhat of a struggle to, you know, as any writer who is submitting knows, you know, you have to do a lot of work to get published. I'm working on, you know, several pieces for publishing, you know, doing that whole carousel of submission, also working on some anthology pieces. And as you noted in my introduction, also working on a YA urban fantasy series, which once again, is probably going to be, you know, at least another year and a half in the works, just based on the amount of research and also wanting to do things well.
Great, great. So now that you have taken the plunge and you're in this new world, how are you finding, what kind of community have you found, and how are you contributing to it, and where is that joining this new community taking you?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think one of the most significant ways that I've really felt the comfort of community and been able to contribute is by participating in VONA. And so this is a workshop that is all teachers of color, and it's all students of color. It is a multi-genre workshop. And there were only a couple of us from Portland, so I'm really hoping that other folks from Portland apply. But the folks that teach at these workshops are absolute masters of their craft. It's a week-long workshop, and one of the things that just struck me was the intensity of not only how much you improve your craft, but we're talking about a place that has been intentionally constructed to be a safe space. And with your writing, regardless of whether it's poetry, memoir, speculative fiction, urban fantasy, YA, you're talking about art that's coming, you know, from somewhere inside your soul. And so a lot of the folks, you know, have experienced some level of racial trauma throughout their lives, have experienced trauma because of their gender, because of their sexual orientation, things like that. And so being there in the safe space 12 hours a day, sometimes more, spending more time than that with each other, was not only incredibly intense, but for me personally, it gave me a deep sense of existential purpose, that not only did I need to tell my story for me, that I needed to tell my story for other people to read it. And that's very much how I felt about my classmates. I desperately want to see them succeed and tell their stories. I want to read their stories. I want to buy their books. And so I would highly recommend Voices of Our Nation, or it's called Voices sometimes. So if you are at all interested in writing, I would highly recommend it. When I applied, I'd only been writing for maybe 8 months. That's it. So I felt like a very underqualified newbie. But hey, they made the selection and they chose me. So even if you're not feeling very confident about your craft, I would recommend applying.
Outstanding, outstanding. So you, as you mentioned in your bio, you are working on a YA world right now. Not to give us a name yet or give us too many details, but can you give us a little bit of the backstory about what the journey your character is going through in this story?
Sure. I think it's a journey that a lot of us living in the U.S. Can relate to, especially coming from an immigrant background, which, if I'm not mistaken, almost all of us at some point come from an immigrant background, or you are Native American, and then you also have a racial history of being othered. So I think it's a very relatable experience. Extent, it's going to mirror the my fantasy of that level of accessibility to spiritual and ancestral practices. And one of the things that came up at Vona and has come up in a lot of my conversations with other POC artists and creatives of color is this idea that, you know, magic already existed in our spirituality.
Yes.
That was always part of our reality. Seeing the ghosts of your ancestors was never necessarily fantasy or speculative fiction. It was something that your grandmother saw and talked about. So this idea of just being able to incorporate that through this genre into not only learning about your history and your cultural background, but also just as an example of our reality, hopefully is what I'll be able to represent. And also just partially my own journey of decolonizing my mind and in my own practices of educating myself, re-indigenizing my culture and my understanding of my people's history.
Outstanding. So can you give us some examples of some of the writers that you have not sought to emulate, but that have been catalysts on your own journey of discovering your own connection to science fiction and speculative fiction?
Absolutely. One writer and activist that is always one of the first names out of my mouth is Walida Imarisha. She was one of the first people I met. I think she's moving to the Bay Area because she just got a teaching position at Stanford.
Yes.
I know. Portland. Portland will miss her deeply. But one of the things that I learned from Walida is that you know, the life of the activist is inextricably tied with speculative fiction. And one of the things that I've learned from her and other Afrofuturists, such as Professor Ajani Brown, is that, you know, MLK, Rosa Parks, they were Afrofuturists. They imagined worlds that didn't exist.
Exactly.
And, you know, there's obviously the Chicano futurist movement, there's Asian futurist movements, but the intersection of imagining, you know, our lives free, our voices being raised up without oppression is something that is not just the job of the activist, but the job of the speculative fiction writer.
Right.
And so, you know, whether you're reading or just following her work, I would highly recommend following Walida Imarisha in terms of reading, you know, just classic science fiction like Octavia Butler, Ursula K. Le Guin. Tanana Rivdo. I would also, if you're looking for any YA urban fantasy, Daniel Jose Older published a YA book, Shadow Shaper. It's an incredibly entertaining, but at its core, anti-colonial book. So those are some of the folks that really inspire me.
A theme that I'd like us to maybe to drill into a little bit is a notion that to some degree, the present that we're living now in an odd way, or maybe not an odd way, is the speculative science fiction for our ancestors. I mean, and in a lot of ways, I can see a lot of us in the regular trying to not only reconnect with our ancestors in that way, but reconnect with some of the rituals and social and some of their social best practices that was sustainable then, that could be sustainable for us in the present and moving on into the future.
Absolutely. One of my favorite quotes, I might butcher this quote a little bit, from Walid Imarisha.
I do it all the time.
It was something to the effect of, our ancestors bent reality to create us. Right?
Dope. That was dope.
Walida.
That
was dope. And I love that, because there are so many times that artists, writers, in our craft and in our struggle, just to know that we exist and that we're not alone, that we feel like it's really hard. It's really hard and it's really painful. And I know that a lot of people, especially now, have been grieving. And one of the things that I think is inspirational is the idea of thinking about what our forebears did so that we could exist and so that we could carry on that torch. And they lived and they, you know, went through, you know, difficulty, a lot of violence, a lack of safety, so that we could continue this for our next generation. Right.
And what's equally inspirational is us being able to imagine what our children's children's children will be able to accomplish in the worlds that they are going to be creating. I mean, I find that extremely empowering to say, you know, I'm going to utilize my imagination and I'm going to imagine, you know, a world council of POC people that are sharing resources and are utilizing old technology and magic and spirituality and new technology and machines to make the world a better place. And that may sound like, oh my God, that is bat crazy science fiction, but that's the science fiction that I want to see happen. So what better way to make it happen by writing it down and actually sharing it so people can see it and they can taste it and they can feel it now?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So, you know, putting your vision out there of what you imagine, that's basically what leaders do.
Yeah.
That is how we move forward and make progress. Somebody has a vision. Someone thinks, you know what, this impossible thing, I think it's possible. And that is part of the beauty of the Vona experience as well, is that everybody comes from very, very different places. We're not talking about a homogenous group and really anyway. I mean, people were coming from all around the world, all around the country, you know, all sorts of different class and education experiences. And I think what we ultimately find is that there's so much that we have in common. Our empathy, mm-hmm. our desire to have community, our desire to see ourselves in the future, to raise up our voices and our children's voices, are the things that ultimately unite us. And I think that, you know, within speculative fiction, there is a strong case and a strong historical presence for just the level of import of allies.
Yeah.
And so, you know, whether it's your being an ally to my community or vice versa, or we're talking about other majority populations, I think that's also an important part of the equation of unity. And so, you know, we talk about the imagination and how we need to have all of these different perspectives. We need science and we need magic.
Yes.
You know, to your point before about the cyclical nature of not just our ancestors and our future children.
Right.
You know, all of these things come full circle.
It's interesting what you just said. It made me think about Beyonce's Lemonade video. And now that I look back on it, that in itself was speculative fiction. It was imagining a world and putting in using a visual vocabulary that we could recognize that was slightly just beyond our reach. And now that I look at it through that lens, its power is increased tenfold, because it is literally showing not just our community, not just her community, not just the white majority community, but showing, hey, if we can see it, we can do it, we can be it, it can be, we are. And so, I mean, that's an example of speculative fiction in the flesh, or on our TV.
Right. And it makes life richer for all of us, right? Not just for Black women, not just for the Black community, literally for all of us. We are inspired and, you know, become richer because of Beyoncé's Afrofuturism.
Right. Right.
Absolutely.
Right. So you when we talked last, you had expressed some interest in where not only this journey within your YA novel might take you, but your short stories, this anthologies. What's next? I mean, what are some of your speculative fiction about yourself moving forward?
Yes. Okay. Yes. I have so many projects. Not only do I have short stories, but right now, I was in a class of about 10, 11 folks at VONA. And to be honest, we're very close. We've actually talked every single day since the workshop ended. And we're hoping to put an anthology together, sort of build a world together. And it was very interesting in reading each other's pieces. Everybody does come from a different culture. Mm-hmm. And the worlds that everyone built were completely unique and rich in different ways. So I'm looking forward to sort of having a group world building experience and hopefully publishing an anthology with those folks.
Nice.
Another thing that I'm hoping to do in the future, and of course, Andre, I have your number, so I'll let you know when this starts, is hopefully writing for television and film. Yes.
That's right up my alley.
Right? Exactly. So I feel like we can make some magic happen in the future. My instructor from VONA, Tanana Reeve-Dew, has worked, she and her husband with Stephen Barnes, with television folks a lot, significantly. And she's also will soon be teaching a screenplay class that I'll be taking. And one of the things that she talked about is how, you know, the large networks, they are... they're not particularly interested in anything but having a business model that makes money. And she said that right now is the time when people are very interested and very invested in the diversity of voices and stories we have out there.
Yes.
She said now is the time, more than any time she's ever seen in her life, where, you know, queer writers, writers of color, women writers really need to be, you know, whether it's making an independent film or trying to apply for spots in the writing room. The field has never been so open, and the public hunger for our stories is unprecedented.
It's obvious. I mean, you know, how many times can you see in the same story between white guy chases after white girl, loses white girl because he pissed her off, and then they get back together at the end of the movie? I mean, we can only see that story so many times, which is why every other movie that's coming out is either a sequel or sequel of a sequel. And even though, don't get me wrong, I love superhero movies because I grew up in comics, but you can tell that the well is dry when it comes to speculative fiction from the classic majority standpoint. They are hungry for new worlds. They're hungry for new perspectives because they've never lived in our world. They've never seen our perspective. So to them, this is real science fiction for them to imagine living in a world where people of color have resonance. I mean, where people of color have import and they say more than two or three lines in a movie. There's a YouTube playlist called, I have to look it up, and I should have thought of it thinking about this context, but it literally edits down all the dialogue by people of color in a movie. And you take a movie like Her, it's like one character and she's got three lines, you know, and that is something that has to change. And it's only going to change because we write it to change, because they have no cultural connection to even understanding the importance and the power of POC voices and POC perspectives in their work. So I think that what you're planning on and what you're doing, you're right. It is a necessary commodity.
Yes.
And it's not just a commodity to make money, but it's a commodity to add new DNA into the genetic pool of our continued evolution, because they've been inbreeding left and right for centuries. I mean, just creatively inbreeding, you know, literally creatively inbreeding for centuries, when you have the same white stars, the same white male stars appearing in every single genre. It has to be upended.
Right. And so, yeah, you know, the time is now. The audiences are ready, and it will take courage. It will take bravery. It's still scary. It still scares me some days. But, you know, the fact that this is the reason why we do art,
right,
ultimately is what I come back to. It says, you know, on one hand, I exist and I am not alone.
Right.
And those are the themes that I hope resonate to people who, you know, consume my work.
Right? And the beauty about that also is that using what was complete science fiction many years ago, the internet, the ability to exchange information. Like when you said, yeah, I've been in touch with my cohort every day since I got back, I'm thinking, well, they don't all live here. How is she keeping in touch with them? Well, heck, you've got cell phones, you've got Skype, you've got the internet, you've got blogs, you've got email. And that's technology that would blow people away 50 years ago, just 50 years ago. So I think it's an amazing thing to realize that you already are tapped into a network of distribution that was unavailable back in the day. Your work is going to get out there whether they want to publish it or not, whether they want to back it or not, because there are people like me who want to talk to you. There are people like me that want to share what you're talking about with the broader audience. And there's someone out there listening right now saying, I want to read about that. I want to share. I want to join in on her world. And that's something that we didn't have access to many years ago. So I have no doubt that you're going to be successful. And if only because I know that there is a market and there are people out there that want to join you in this world and just stretch out and breathe. And like you said, when you were talking about your pre-wedding, just to find a space of happiness and realizing that all the people that you're seeing in that space look like you or connect to you. So I have no doubt in your success.
Well, thank you so much. And thank you for this opportunity.
Oh, no. You're doing me a favor. I got to get someone in every other week. So I appreciate it. Well, once again, Monica, thank you so much for coming on. We're going to work some more. You know this.
Yes, absolutely. This is the start of a long journey in partnership.
Outstanding. Outstanding. Once again, that was Monica Villasenor, and this is Andre Middleton on KBOO Art Focus. Before we let Monica go, I just want to go over some of our art news once again. Check out Night Lights Info Session at Regional Arts and Culture Council at 411 Northwest Park Avenue this Thursday, July 14th at 6:30 p.m. Also, please go check out the Portland Biennial at DeShecta at exhibition spaces across the state now through September 18th. You can also check out The Color of Now on Facebook to participate in their upcoming thoughtful and engaging conversations about how we can connect with each other no matter what our differences are. Well, that just about wraps up another episode of Art Focus. You can find photos, links, as well as all of our guest info on our show page at kboo.fm/artfocus. Please follow the link there to Facebook page and like our KBOO Art Focus page as well. At some point, you should be able to find a link to the on-demand copy of this show at the KBOO page or as well as the Facebook KBOO page. It's also just to make sure you all know that it is my goal to meet and introduce the listeners of KBOO to a broad spectrum of regional artists. If you're a visual artist in any medium, writer or musician, I don't care, I'd love to have you or your organization on our show. It's also my goal to share information relevant to artists as well. So when I hear about residencies like the Night Lights residency that's going to be happening at PCM or grant deadlines, which don't let me forget, the Regional Arts and Culture Council is having a project grant deadline is happening sometime in August. Go check out the website for that. Or call for artists. You hear about it on this show as well as our Facebook page. We're going out to the music from Danny Skrilla from Portland's own Zam Zam Sounds, run by my boy Ezra E3. Thanks again for joining us in Art Focus. Hope to see you again soon. Take care and peace.
sailor killer ran on New Year's Day, and he nailed his right boot to the mast. He never whistles on board, they say, but wakes each morning with his flask. Beneath the roots of the ocean, under the shade of the sea, gather these laughing bones, darling, be mercy for me. Above the branches of clouds, atop the crown of the sky, let your tears fall and join the waves where I lie. Good luck is offered the sailor, with a fist he gives it back. True luck it flies with a prayer, and blood the only thing.
KABU at the Clinton is our monthly film series at the Clinton Street Theater. This month, Right to Survive, Breaking the Chains, will play Thursday, July 14th at 7 p.m. The night will give an inside perspective of the struggles of the houseless community and showcase a series of short films documenting Right to Survive's origins in 2009, Direct Actions, and its annual Pitch a Tent Campout, which protests the city's hypocrisy when it comes to allowing sidewalk camping for the Rose Parade. Many of the Right to Survive board members will also share their experiences and talk about the process of moving to their new location. Again, that's Right to Survive, Breaking the Chains, Thursday, July 14th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kabu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from the Mission Theater and Pub, presenting the swamp rock and country blues of Tony Joe White with